Welcome to another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. My name is H.F. Mason. I'm a general surgeon and chief quality officer for the Baptist System.
Hey, everyone. I'm Brad Parsons, vice president of market operations at Baptist.
I'm Gemma Jones, an improvement coach based in the UK and lucky enough to be working with the team at Baptist.
Well, guys, we are so excited today to have Bob Chapman as our guest on the podcast. Bob served as CEO at Barry Waymiller for 50 years until this fall when he, I think, handed over the reins to his son, Kyle. That's three generations of Chapman's running the company. Barry Waymiller is a global supplier of manufacturing technology and services. They've been around for 140 years, which is incredible. They've taken multiple companies and transformed them. And today we're going to talk about how they did that. But primarily we're going to talk about a book that Bob initially wrote 10 years ago called Everybody Matters, The Extraordinary Power of Caring for Your People Like Family. It was a second edition came out just recently with new content, and we'll be talking about that. But Bob, I know I kind of gave you an introduction, but tell us a little bit more about yourself and what kind of brought about this book.
Well, the short version is I believe some higher power has blessed us with a vision of the way the world was meant to be.
Amen.
And where people genuinely care for each other, moving from it's all about me and my success to I actually care about others in my journey to success. That revelation, that series of revelations that shaped my view, shaped the way I started leading our company with 12,000 team members around the world. So the answers that I'm going to give you to your questions, remember, our exposure is far more than just manufacturing and business. We speak in every part of society, and the issues we're talking about exist in every part of society, as I've experienced with my involvement. I think I gave 300 talks in the last 5 years to every part of our society.
Hey, Bob, thank you so much for being on. I'm a big fan of yours, and we're certainly giddy to have you on the podcast. This Connecting the Dots is something that we is very, very close to us, but it's really intended to be for a healthcare audience. I think it's grown past that. You know, I think we got folks kind of all over listening, but it's intended to help us connect the dots to why things work in organizations and how leaders can be more effective. And again, your book is a great example of that. And so, you know, you've also started with, you know, a heart issue. We're a faith-based organization. We got a faith-based mission and something that is also very near and dear to us. So your work is, I think our listeners are just really going to love to hear from you today. And I'm wondering if you'll start in a little bit about how and why does everybody matter?
You know, you go back. I have a traditional education in business, an accounting degree from Indiana, MBA from Michigan, a couple of years of experience in Price Waterhouse, and then was asked to join the family business in about 1969. So very traditional business background. And I've had the opportunity to speak at college campuses on the defining moments of my life on a number of occasions. When I look back on it, I look back at the way I took management classes, got a management degree, and I got a job in management. So I thought I was supposed to manage people. Okay. And I saw people, nobody ever said this to me, but the way I saw people, they were objects for my success. I needed an engineer. I needed a sales executive. I needed a production worker. I needed these people for my success. I was a nice guy. We had a nice company as I took it through this transition. But I saw people, the lens through which I saw people, they were functions for my success. And it was working. You know, I took a broken $20 million business. The short version, a long story short, 50-year career, I adopted 150 companies around the world to reshape our future. We created an organization that Harvard wrote a case study on. I believe, and we talk about faith, there's no question in my mind, and I think, and I hope your listeners will come to the same conclusion, that there's no way that what I have shared with you came from my education or my experience. What we've learned in this journey is you can't ask people to care for others. You have to teach them how to care. Caring is a teachable skill, just like a language.
I love that so much, Bob. And I think it's also interesting because Barry Waymiller, like you said, you've kind of adopted 150 companies through acquisition through the years. And in your book, you talked about how to instill the management principles and the caring principles that you learned. I'm wondering if you could kind of share a little bit of that for the leaders listening.
Well, the most basic way, as I had said earlier, the lens through which I was taught and then I experienced on the world, I saw people as functions for my success. I was nice. We had a nice company. We were doing fine in this transformation. I took it on. But that day at a wedding, when I saw these two precious children walking down the aisle to be married with the father so proud of his daughter and the young man standing at the altar, I had a revelation that is what people can relate to. The lens through which I saw the 12,000 people in our organization was flipped upside down. That day, I looked at our 12,000 people and said, they're not engineers, accountants, production workers, labor, nurses, you know, clinicians. They are somebody's precious child whose parents brought them into this world hoping that they could be who they're intended to be. And I have them in my care for 40 hours a week. Business leadership could be the most powerful force for good in the world if we had leaders who had the skills and courage to care. And again, this is not just the business issue. And when I talk to CEOs of hospitals, when I talk to doctors and nurses, we have a world where we simply don't know how to care for each other, okay? And you can't ask people to care. And my goal is, and I love this opportunity with all of you, my goal is to put care into health care.
I love that too.
And Bob, you know, there's a book that's similar, a little bit similar to yours, you know, in healthcare. It's called Patients Come Second. Now, in healthcare, we've always been taught that, you know, our patient is our number one priority, which they are, and that we should sacrifice, you know, everything for the good of the patient. But, you know, tell me your thoughts on that and how, you know, a lot of times we do focus so much on the patient and don't really take care of our team members the way we should.
Well, first of all, I'll say you can't really take care of your patients if you're not taking care of your nurses and your doctors and your team members. So if you think you are, you're not, okay? Because the bad news about COVID, it was highly contagious. The good news about caring, it's even more contagious than COVID. If people don't feel cared for, it is difficult, if not impossible, for them to fully care for others. They can go through the routines, the procedures are dictated. But what we've experienced in these 22 years of journey from going from leadership, from management to leadership, is caring is contagious. I checked in a hospital for a checkup the other day, and right next to me, a sign on the computer says, patients first. And I said, that's pitiful. I want the doctors and nurses to be cared for. I'd share with you, we were given an opportunity in the healthcare industry to take our vision and to a well-run regional hospital outside Austin, Texas. I flew down there. I shared what I'm sharing with you today for probably 2 hours with trustees, board members, doctors, nurses, the team, probably 20 people in the room. At the end of it, the doctors and nurses cried because they said, nobody cares about us. Okay? So to me, Hertz used to have an expression, our customer's number one. That's a sad statement because that means everybody else is number two. Okay. To me, people are first. Okay. If you care for the caregivers, they will care for the patients and go home. Remember, when we taught people to care, this is amazing to me. When we taught people the skills of empathetic listening, which should be the greatest skill a doctor or nurse has, but when we teach it in a 3-day class, And then we teach how to recognize and celebrate the goodness in others, which is another class, and then a culture of service. When we teach those three classes, trying to transform managers into leaders, 95% of the feedback is how it affects their marriage and their relationship with their children. We taught it at work because we wanted to convert managers into leaders, but what we were doing is teaching human skills, and where do we care most about our human skills? At home with our family. Absolutely. And so we wonder what's wrong with kids today. The family unit is under a lot of stress. You know, we got layoffs and downsizing and financial stress, and we have leaders who are not bad people, but they were never taught to care. Okay, they were taught to achieve results. Okay, and we have a society where success is money, power, and position. It doesn't matter how you get it as long as it's legal, because then you can write checks to charity and everybody will say you're a wonderful person. Okay, the greatest act of charity, I tell CEOs, is not the checks you write. It's how you treat the people you have the privilege of leading. Okay, we've been doing this for over 20 years. This is not an academic theory. I'm sharing with you what we've actually experienced, okay? When people feel cared, I mean, how could this manufacturing company, and we have 12,000 people, we operate all over the world, we build equipment for the pharmaceutical industry, for medical devices, for packaging, so we do lots of things, but our focus is our people, okay? Not our machines. Washington University had two organizational development professors interview me for 2 hours. At the end of that, they said, "You're the first CEO we've ever talked to that never talked about your product." And I paused a minute and said, "I've been talking about our product for the last 2 hours. It's our people. I won't go to my grave proud of the machinery we build. I'll go to my grave proud of the people that built that machinery." It caught them completely off guard. So the purpose of leadership is the people you have the privilege of leading. And again, one of the statistics that is relevant to your audience, I've been told 74% of all illnesses are chronic. The biggest cause of chronic illness is stress. And the biggest cause of stress is work. Okay. And Jeffrey Pfeiffer at Stanford wrote a book, Dying for a Paycheck. And he doesn't mean anxious to get it. He estimates we're killing 120,000 people a year of work-related stress. Okay, and that occurs in hospitals as much as it does manufacturing plays out.
Sure.
So I guarantee you the leaders of our hospitals, which is where care, the foundation product is care, have not been taught to care themselves. They've been taught to achieve results. They got financial issues. I mean, when I speak to CEOs of hospitals, they say, "Bob, I love your message, but we're inundated with all these organizations we have to comply with and be tested by. And, you know, we don't have time." And I said, "Don't tell me you don't have time to care. You cannot tell me that." But they do, because they have to respond. And so I would say to you, we have a world where we're self-destructing. I see managers, bosses, to the supervisors, chancellors. I do not see truly human leaders who look at the people they have the privilege of leading and treat them with respect and dignity.
Yeah. Jim, I wonder what kind of questions you have.
Well, selfishly, Bob, I want to sort of ask you about a story that's in the book where you talk about when a consultant came in to talk to your organization or one of your organizations about implementing a lean kind of philosophy. And I think a lot of listeners to this podcast are going to be, you know, within the continuous improvement and or lean kind of thinking world. And I say this as a recovering lean consultant myself. And so I just really wonder if you could share with everyone the story of your reaction to that sort of desire to implement lean.
Yeah, we heard about lean. We bought a company that's very much on the lean journey. So I became aware of it. I went to meet with Jim Womack, who wrote the book on lean at Harvard. And I said, "Yeah, Jim, you know, how does it feel to have written a book that is impacting the world?" And he said, "My only disappointment is that 97% of all companies that embrace the ideas of lean fail to become lean companies." That's right. Yeah. And then Liz, his associate, who used to work at General Motors, leaned over to me and said, "Bob, Jim is a professor. He doesn't really understand people, okay? Lean is about process improvement or profit improvement. We say it's to eliminate the frustrations. We say it's for continuous improvement. So But lean means waste elimination. Do you know of anybody that is motivated by waste elimination? Okay. So what we find, our experience is we don't call it lean. We call it L3, Living Legacy of Leadership. Continuous improvement is a wonderful concept, and there's good disciplines there. But really, the whole, I met with Norm Bodak, who studied Toyota, and he met with me a long time. And he said, Bob, I know Toyota intimately. I think you've taken the Toyota experience to another level, to a human level, not just a process level. So I would say to you that when this lean consultant came in and said, you know, that we're about continuous improvement and reducing loneliness, I said, no. America has embraced lean as a way of reducing cost. Okay. We say eliminating, frustration and so forth. It is a cost reduction technique that does not inspire people. Okay. But I always wait for that person in the plant who's part of a continuous improvement process to look at the leadership team and said, what are you guys doing to be better leaders? You can ask me about what I do. What are you doing to embrace continuous improvement? Because I never see examples, people who lead from the heart. As Raj Sisodia, my co-author, said, we are taught it's between the head and the wallet. And our journey is between the head, the heart, and the wallet, connecting the three. Okay. And again, hospitals are no different. It's really sad to me that the issues we face in America healthcare and the burnout rate of doctors and nurses right now. It is sad to me, but they're put under, they're obviously trying to make a profit. They're trying to fund themselves. So they're trying to embrace all these techniques, but they forget the most basic thing of caring for the people that are serving the people in need. And that's where it should start. To say that the patients are number one is sad, because if they are, I don't want to be in your hospital, because I want to make sure that nurse taking care of me feels cared for herself.
Bob, one of the myths that we try to dispel or have tried to dispel on the podcast is that the myth that people are born leaders. And we firmly believe that leadership involves skills that can be practiced and that can be learned and that can be improved upon. And in the context of Everybody Matters, what are some of the skills and practices that leaders can use and practice daily and get better at, in your opinion?
Well, it really starts with leadership. To me, the single most important attribute of a leader is to know where you're going. Okay. I find most people react to the issues that they face, and we at various times we face different issues, inflation at one time, funding for Medicare, et cetera. The number one responsibility of a leader is to make sure those people in your span of care have a grounded sense of hope for the future, that you have a business model, even in a hospital, that makes them feel safe and valued, that they can count on you not to have a layoff, not to say that we can't do these things, to be a good steward, to have a business model. That is the number one responsibility of a leader, okay? And in departments, is to make sure that the people in your span of care, not head count, but heart count, the people in your span of care feel valued, okay? Because clearly you cannot treat your patients with respect and dignity. You cannot bring the full gifts of the nurses and doctors when they don't feel valued. And again, the greatest skill that a leader can have, in our opinion, is the ability to have a North Star, to know where you're going as a department, as a hospital, as a group. Where are we going? Why do we want to go there? And when we get there, why won't we take our people to a better place so that the people in your span of care feel safe, that they have a future, and that you know where you're going? Now, that may change over time with the things, but it's always having that North Star. I don't see many people embracing that, okay? I see them reacting to issues. The second thing is very important to us is recognition and celebration, which we tried out in that regional hospital. We tend to, in my history, we tend to recognize people for years of service. Okay, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, we give them an award, a little ceremony. Those are some of the very people I wish had retired, because just because you've been here 5 or 10 years doesn't mean you are good to the patients, doesn't mean you're a good steward of this, the principal of this hospital. So we teach how to recognize and celebrate the goodness of others. So a cadence of celebration is critical, because we know when they leave our care, they're inundated with the brokenness in the world, the challenges of the at home. So our goal in the 40 hours we have in their care is they feel valued, okay? They feel appreciated. And so the cadence of recognition and celebration is critical. And the third thing we teach is culture of service to our leaders, seizing the opportunity to serve others, moving from it's all about me to I actually care about you. And so those three fundamentals, it still amazes me, this eclectic team I had 20 years ago who developed our university came up with these three foundational courses of human skills. Because how could it be that people like Simon Sinek come in, who's seen companies all over the world, and said he's never seen anything like our company. And he said, if it exists, it must be possible. Bill Ury, world peace negotiator. Think of all the issues we have in the world right now. Bill Ury, world peace negotiator from Harvard, comes in and says he saw the answer to world peace in our company. I said, wow. Bill, how could you possibly see the answer to world peace? And he said, I saw a place where people care about each other. Okay. So moving from it's all about me to I actually care about us. And that's a key thing. When you create, when the people in your hospitals are not there for their careers, they're there for their fellow team members, so that collectively they all feel part of a team, each playing their role well, so that, that we provide the service and care that we would want for our own kids, okay? I remember seeing a nurse one time on a walk, and we met her, and she said, a private equity firm just bought our practice, and they told us how many minutes we could spend with a patient. And she said, I didn't get into healthcare to be told how many minutes I could spend with a patient. I have a concierge doctor in Florida who quit the corporate practice she was in because she was told how many minutes she could spend with a patient as a target, okay? So hospitals are no different business. They've got financial challenges. They have, you know, technology challenges, and they have making sure that you have people that can deliver the service that your community needs. So listening is the greatest leadership skill, not listening to debate or judge, but listening to validate the worth of others, having a vision of where you're going, recognizing the goodness in people along the journey, and creating a culture of service where people actually care about each other. That is the world that God intended us to live. Okay. And again, in 300 speeches around the world, Harvard, McKinsey, nobody has ever debated what I just said to you. They just have no idea how to go from where we are to where we need to be as a civilization, where people are our purpose.
Bob, one of the things I'm curious about is that, you know, this is, again, it really resonates with me personally. I think it resonates with our organization. We certainly try to practice that. But when you look around, are we getting better at this as a culture?
We're actually going downhill. We're going downhill because there's more and more pressure for short-term issues. And so I would say to you, in my lifetime, it's gotten worse. And I'm going to ask you a simple question. Do you teach your team members, from doctors and nurses to the support team, how to listen? Do you teach that?
Yeah, we have tried. And again, I would be challenged.
Well, you tried?
No, fair enough.
You either do or you don't do. Okay.
Yeah, we do it. But again, I'm here. I am talking to you. You're asking me the question. We've been students of Edgar Schein and the work of Humble Inquiry that we've had leaders go through. And again, I think there's always opportunity to improve in how we listen. But I do think that we've had a lot of coursework to train leaders on what that looks like.
Yeah, because we offer a 3-day class, and we're Medical University of South Carolina is bringing us to their university, and we just had another university sign up in Memphis to do this, where we have a gentleman named Evander Mullen some years ago who designed this unbelievable, sitting in a Starbucks, and from his experience designed this 3-day experience on empathetic listening. And the most common statement that people have when they leave that class is, it changed my life.
Yeah.
Okay. I now know, and they add, I now know how to raise my 2-year-old daughter. Okay. They didn't say I'm going to be a better nurse or a better machinist or a better accountant. They said it changed my life. And I would say to you, and that's why we have the foundation where we've now taught 20,000 people around the country to listen without judgment, to listen to validate the word. It is I don't want you to miss it. It is the most powerful human skill anybody could have to live a life of meaning and purpose, to validate the worth of others. I always thought when you cared for somebody, you went over and talked to them. It turns out when you care for somebody, you go over to listen to them. Truly listen to them. Okay.
Great, Bob.
And again, nurses walking in to see a patient. Are we talking to the patient or are we listening to the patient? So I would say in every hospital, and I believe the Medical University of South Carolina, which has got 25,000 people, they are now requiring this of their nurses, that they take this class. And my doctor in Aspen just flew to Charleston to take the class, and it profoundly affected her. She's a doctor. So we offer a class that teaches people how to listen without judgment, which has a profound impact on people. Okay. So the good news, if the world embraces the practices which we bring to it, the healthcare issues will start declining in our country. Because, you know, people who feel valued have 40% fewer healthcare claims than most people. So again, we know that we can eliminate the stress. Remember, there's a 20% increase in heart attacks on Monday mornings when people go to work. Okay. I mean, we're self-destructing as a society, and because we're a numerically based society.
So Bob, you know, listening to you, I defy anyone to say that this doesn't make absolute sense and every business and organization should be doing it. So why aren't we teaching this at business school to leaders?
That's a great question.
The question is because I once went up to Harvard and I said, what is the, in America, what is the purpose of education? Because I was going to give a speech at a university. And they said the founding fathers in America felt we needed an informed citizenry so we could have a democracy. Can't have a democracy if people can't use with the right to vote and use it and vote with the right intelligence. And then the Industrial Revolution came along. And great industrialists like Henry Ford said, I need skills in my factories, and I'll pay them better, I'll give them better benefits. And communities were built around factories with jobs that paid better. But when were unions formed? In the very early stages, because one thing Henry Ford did not say is, I need leaders as I bring these organizations together out to care for these people whose lives that will be in my care. He said, I need workers that I will pay well, an economic relationship, okay? And we thought that if people had better paying jobs with better health care and better standards of living, they'd be happier. Well, guess what? We have the most prosperous economy in our history, and we have the highest level of depression and anxiety we've ever had. Why? I mean, we've got economic prosperity. We're not sending men and women off to war. Why? Because we forgot one key thing. We forgot to teach people how to become leaders in all these new fields that would grow from the Industrial Revolution. And so I would say to you, our education system basically was told by the great donors who write checks to the endowment funds, this, we need engineers, we need scientists, we need IT people. We need these, and we'll pay them well. And so our universities became skills factories. Okay, and we sold these graduates to the market. If there's good demand, we must be doing something right. Okay, nobody ever stopped to say, nobody has ever stopped to say that we need to teach people how to care for each other. As we come together in these organizations And I guarantee you, I have not yet been in an organization where we actually teach these skills of caring. But where should it begin more than any place? In hospitals, okay?
Absolutely. And Bob, your work is so transformative, but you just came out with a second edition. So I think before we leave today, we definitely got to know kind of what prompted the second edition and what should we look for?
Well, if you told me 15 years ago I was going to write a book someday, I'd land on the moon before I write a book. I mean, I'm an accountant. I don't write books. But person after person, Simon Sinek, Raj Sisodia, Harvard, for everybody came in to see our company when this was discovered by Simon Sinek, and they said, you have got to share this with the world. You have to share it. So we wrote the first book. And not having been an author, the technical way you do that is you have the hero's journey. My journey from management to leadership, which is the first third. And then the second two thirds of the book is, now, how do you do this? Okay, so it was kind of a how do you get there and then how do you do it book. Well, that was 10 years ago. And again, a good business book sells 5,000 to 15,000. We sold 110,000 as of today in six languages around the world. Okay, it is, according to our publisher, on the very top end of a successful book. Okay. And we felt that we have learned so much in the last 10 years about the impact of doing that, that we really needed for this book to share the impact. And the theme of these final five chapters, which to me are more powerful than the original book was in total, because stories, the impact are powerful, is the way we lead impacts the way people live. It, again, never occurred to me in my education or my experience, the way I'd run Barry Wimler would affect the way you go home and treat your spouse and kids and your health. But 95% of the feedback in our 25 years, the stories would make you come to tears if you heard what we have heard from the impact.
That's incredible. Again,
a gentleman in Italy the other day talked about the impact he had with his son when he learned to do this. A lady in northern Wisconsin said, a single mother with two kids said, I took your class and I realized I'm not a good mother. I mean, the impact of teaching human skills is profound. So yeah. We felt called to really add that third piece. What is the, if you do this, here's how you get there, here's how you do it, and here's the impact. So the five chapters are the impact this will have on the people that you have the privilege of leading to help us heal this poverty of dignity in the country.
Well, Bob, time has flown by. This has been great. We greatly appreciate your knowledge, your wisdom and insight. You know, it's in the South, we like to say it's just things that your mama taught you when you were little. But not saying that it's easy. It's simple, it seems like, but sometimes it's hard. But folks, the name of the book is Everybody Matters. I highly encourage you to go out and get a copy. It's well worth the money that you'll spend on it. And once again, Bob, on behalf of Baptist, thank you very much.
It's an honor, and my hope is to bring care to healthcare.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Appreciate it.